Tuesday the 15th, and we have a work session scheduled, open work session on Senate Bill 595. Elizabeth, would you brief us on the bill, please?
Okay. Chairman Strobeck, members of the committee, with Senate Bill 595, it's allowing a personal property tax exemption from wineries. And for most small wineries, this is their movable winemaking equipment and machinery is considered personal property. This applies to tax years beginning on and after July 1st of 2000. Now, you also have a Dash 1 amendment, which maybe I'll just address too, and that is just allowing only the wineries that are located in an exclusive farm use zone to actually have this personal property tax exemption. And that really only corresponds to about a 20% reduction because about 80% of the wineries are in the ESU zone. There was recently a survey done by the Department of Revenue which looked at 12 different counties that were the top wine producing counties. And it was estimated that in 1998-99, there was $11.6 million in assessed value and personal property of wineries in the EFU zones. And of all that assessed value, the personal property was about 80% of the total there in the EFU zones. The survey also found that the taxes, the total taxes for personal property of wineries in the EFU zones was $133,461 per year. So if you kind of take that amount and kind of then look to also at the future in the sense that the survey found that there's quite a high growth rate for wineries, and the counties that were surveyed estimated there'd be additional 23 additional winery accounts coming on next year in 1999-2000. And these new accounts, if you consider how many would be in EFU zones, about 80%, that corresponds to about 4.1 million in value for wineries. And then this causes about additional $50,000 in taxes that would go off the roll. So in considering both the 1998 tax roll estimate provided by the survey as well as an estimate for these additional counts that will come on in 1999-2000, it is estimated $185,694 would be lost annually in personal property taxes beginning in the year 2000-2001 due to this measure. And this property tax exemption is going to have a pretty large effect in high-growth counties, in particular Yamhill County.
Okay, thank you. This passed the Senate 26-1, and we've not had a public hearing on this bill specifically in the Revenue Committee, so I'd like to ask anybody who's interested in speaking on the bill to help yourself. Gary, do you want to start out?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling, here today representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association in support of Senate Bill 595. And Mr. Chairman, in particular, I want to thank you for scheduling the hearing today on this bill. As you noted, Senate Bill 595 passed the Oregon Senate by a vote of 26-1. And in fact, the bill, as currently written, is identical to legislation that passed overwhelmingly in the House in the 1997 legislative session. Its purpose is simply to clarify that personal property at a winery with a wine grape vineyard is exempt from taxation. Oregon case law establishes wineries as a farm use. In Craven versus Jackson County, the Oregon Supreme Court determined that making wine is an accepted farm practice because fermenting wine grapes is customarily done in conjunction with vineyards. The court's decision matches reality because there is no commercial purpose for wine grapes other than fermenting them into wine. Our argument for Senate Bill 595 centers on a contention there is no bright line between the vineyard and the winery when it comes to tax treatment of personal property such as barrels and portable bottling equipment. In fact, there is no way to store fermented wine grapes other than in barrels or bottles. Local government officials take a different view, as I'm sure you'll hear shortly. In part, they worry that under provisions of Senate Bill 595, a winery could qualify for personal property tax exemption, even though its owner only incidentally grows wine grapes. To allay this concern, we have proposed an amendment, which is the Dash 1 Amendment, that limits the exemption to wineries located in exclusive farm use zones with owners grow wine grapes. This eliminates the possibility that a standalone winery in a non-EFU zone will qualify for the exemption, even if the owner grows wine grapes at a vineyard elsewhere. And in fact, the revenue impacts, which staff has noted, indicates there are several of those. So in fact, there are such wineries in the state. As our association's name reflects, wine growers view themselves principally and first as farmers. They grow wine grapes to make wine. They see the exemption as a logical extension of their farming enterprise. They, in fact, see no distinction between the equipment they use to crush and ferment grapes than the combine used by wheat ranchers to convert wheat into grain. Wine growers also don't view this exemption as a tax break. They see it as the correct tax treatment of their movable assets. The relatively modest revenue impact of Senate Bill 595, which is lowered noticeably by the amendment we proposed, is in fact the best witness to that. Much has been made of the precedent SB 595 might set, but lost in the debate is the beneficial impact on local economies, on the preservation of marginal farmland, and on local and state tax revenues that wineries in Oregon generate. Wineries represent a new generation of higher value farming that can and does thrive near urban fringes on land many people thought was only valuable as view lots. Through intense cultivation and on-site processing, wineries add value, including in terms of real property that is and will remain taxable under 595. At a time when farming generally, and family farming in particular, is in decline, the wine industry is attracting fresh talent who are willing to buy uncultivated land, plant wine grapes, and make fine wine. In addition to the localized benefits wineries produce, Oregon's wine industry has gained national and international acclaim, which in turn has attracted tourists and business opportunities to the state. So, Mr. Chairman, we would encourage you to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment, and we support passage with that amendment of Senate Bill 595.
Thank you, Gary. Any questions? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Three of us.
Gill and counties. Okay. Nice. I see four.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Gill Riddell, staff of the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm accompanied by Rob Johnstone, Yamhill County Commissioner from the heart of wine country, Art Schlack, who's an AOC land use specialist, and Tom Lenhares, Columbia County assessor. And we'll have Rob start off with our position, our point of view of this, and you'll find it somewhat different from what you just heard. So,
thank you, Chair Strobeck, members of the committee. I appreciate you hearing from us today. I am from Yamhill County, which is right in the heart of wine country. Wine growing, wine processing, and retail sales of wine in Yamhill County is one of our highest agricultural uses in the county and is very important to us. However, as this bill impacts local revenues for the county, I believe that it has a detrimental effect to long-term economic stability of our ability to provide services not only for local government and schools, but I believe also that it does not have any negative impact whatsoever on the continued growth of what is a very fast-growing segment of our economic development infrastructure in Yamhill County. Our primary issues with this, first of all, are, of course, that it does reduce revenue to local government and schools in an environment where we are already dealing with voter-imposed constitutional limits on our ability to raise property tax revenue. And so we're, in my days over here in the Capitol, I've been admonished a number of times by different legislators to find new and creative ways to meet the increasing demands for local government services in an environment that already limits our ability to increase property taxes. And maybe that's a good thing. It gets us to think outside the box and sharpen our pencils. But every time there's a new exemption or a new limit on our ability to raise revenue to provide public and demanded services, it makes it that much harder. And this bill would do that to us, is make it that much harder and limit revenues for local government and schools. I mentioned that not only are we living with imposed limits by initiatives from the voters, but we also deal with a number of what we view as state unfunded mandates from the state, from everything from assessment and taxation to the funding of our district attorney's office to process state crimes and the court facilities that we're required to provide for the state court system. Those are just a few examples, and I appreciate the votes of many of you here in helping move us a little further down the road in assessment and taxation. That situation has been helped some, but one of our concerns, not only from the fiscal impact that this would have, though admittedly, initially, it would be fairly small, I believe that it opens the door to an entirely new exemption possibility for other agricultural processing tax exemptions. And that's a concern to us because while granting exemptions are popular with legislators, they wreak havoc on local government's ability to deal with local problems in this kind of environment. And so I'm concerned that it opens the door to a new type of tax exemption on processing equipment. It was mentioned the previous speaker addressed a Supreme Court decision concerning whether or not wineries were a farm use as defined by statute. Currently statute, from a reading of the statute, that wineries are not a farm use. I don't know what the court decision was in that, and I don't know if, what the arguments were. Right now, wineries and wine processing are not a farm use as defined by statute. I believe that the exemption amounts to an unnecessary public subsidy for an industry that is already highly successful. The number of wineries and grape growing operations in Yamhill County just continues to grow. I don't believe that the tax on the processing equipment is a detriment to that. In any way, I believe that the demand for this kind of product will simply continue to grow, but to grant an exemption for the processing equipment would create another hardship for local government to be able to continue to provide services that are necessary for our folks. And I would respectfully request that you deny this concept and reject Senate Bill 595.
Mr. Chair, can we have Art address the reference question?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. ORS 215-203 defines farm use for the state of Oregon. And if you look at that section of the statute, you will not find wineries defined as a farm use. In fact, it lays out some criteria of which there is case law and background, the legislative background, that would indicate that wineries are not farm use. Wineries are allowed, however, based on two different ways. One, there is a specific provisions in ORS 215-213 and 215-283 that says that small wineries subject to certain criteria that are spelled out in statute may be permitted in a farm zone. And those criteria are found in ORS 215-422. Wineries that do not meet that specific criteria, and the criteria deal with the number of acres of vineyards that have to be planted in conjunction with the winery, the number of gallons of wine that can be that the winery would process. Those are some of the criteria at this point. And I can get those specific references for you from the statute, Mr. Chair, if you'd like. The other way that wineries can be established is a non-farm use as a commercial activity in conjunction with farm. And we have wineries in the state of Oregon and in many counties that have been established using those two criteria. One as a non-farm permitted use and the other as a non-farm conditional use. So those are the ways that wineries can be established. I have a copy of the King's Estate Winery case that's before the Supreme Court. I don't believe a decision in that case has been issued at this point, but there is compelling arguments and legislative history that goes to 1989 legislature that indicates that wineries are not defined as a farm use, and in fact they are either a permitted use provided by the legislature in statute or a non-farm use. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to provide you a copy of the King of State's brief that was filed on behalf of the Department of Revenue for your review if you'd like to see that.
I'm not sure that that's necessary at this point, but just you need to listen to what your point of view is on that. Did you have anything else to add, Mark?
Mr. Chairman, I think we basically, Tom Lindy has asserted to, if you wish, talk about the new nature of this particular exemption that's being proposed and how it's different from others before it. We're principally concerned with the precedent that this this exemption would establish, so maybe Tom can make a comment or two, and then that would be it for us except for question.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Lunhares. I'm the Columbia County Assessor, and I represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. I guess my biggest concern with the bill, as has already been mentioned, it would be that for the first time, we would be allowing an exemption for farm equipment for an activity that's not a farm use. And from a policy standpoint, that just doesn't make much sense, and trying to explain that would be difficult at best. So that's my biggest concern. My second concern is that I understand the argument about the wine, the grapes that are grown are intended to be used to make wine. Well, couldn't the same thing be said for apples that are only grown for making applesauce, or strawberries that are only grown to make jam? And I think it speaks to the argument you've heard previously about the whole issue of processing. You know, where does the line get drawn? This pushes the line, and I think we're going to see in the future the line just keeps getting farther and farther out. And that troubles me from a policy standpoint as well as just a revenue impact standpoint. The third and last point I would like to make is under a bill that you previously considered, processing facilities of any kind under 10,000 square feet already are considered a farm use, and therefore their personal property would be exempted. So under current law, small wineries where less than 10,000 square feet of building space is utilized for the production of wine would already be eligible for the exemption that's being sought here. So if part of the policy consideration is an encouragement for the small mom and pop, if you will, wineries where they are in fact growing all their own grapes and they're just producing a few barrels, the personal property exemption is already available to the small operations. And with that, I would answer any questions if any of the members have any.
Mr. Chair, could I have one final closing comment on that last point? I know that it was the intention of this committee not to have the bill 2625 do that. We saw you all nod when the issue was this is just the land. You're affecting the land under the processing facility. Problem is the Attorney General, and I believe there's a couple of tax court cases, say otherwise, and we would need clarifying language. The bill is in the House Water Environment Committee, and Chair Representative Welch has not agreed to a hearing to clarify the legislative intent. So at this point, we have to assume there will not be a hearing and that the legislative intent will not be satisfied by current law, and you will have granted unintentionally this exemption to 10,000 square foot processing equipment and the personal property within them. We know that's not what you intended, but that appears to be the effect. So, with that, I believe we're through.
Questions?
Mr. Chair?
Oops,
just a little clarification. We're looking here at the testimony we first got from the Wine Growers Association of Gary. Presented to us in the third paragraph, Oregon case law clearly establishes wineries as a farm use. And then the second bullet paragraph on your testimony, wineries are not a farm use, as defined by ORS 215.203. And Representative Williams has brought in the Craven versus Jackson County case, which, if I can see that for a second, it does say in the I understand this is not a full reading of the case, but when interpreting and applying the statutes in effect at the time of Samad's application for a CUP, a local land use agency or LUBA could reasonably conclude based on the statute that a vineyard is a farm use and that the winery and tasting room are either farm use or commercial activity in conjunction with farm use. That's a 1989 case. What's the answer? How do we reconcile this? Is it or is it not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, let me just read from you, and I'll give you a copy of the brief that was submitted by the Department of Revenue.
Well, if I will.
And in that, Mr. Representative Shetterly, there's discussion that in 1989 that the legislature, by amending the farm use statutes to ORS 215, 213, and 283, sub 1, to allow a winery meeting, and then what they did was establish certain criteria that I made reference to. They established those wineries in sub 1. And the conclusion is that both the sub 1, which are permitted uses, other than farm use, that are permitted in the farm zone, and that you have the sub 2, which are non-farm conditional uses that are also, again, permitted, that by identifying those as either permitted, otherwise permitted, or conditional uses, that they did not define those. The legislature made a policy decision not to specifically amend the definition of farm use that is in 203 to say that wineries are a farm use. If the legislature in 1989 had amended the definition of farm use in 203 to include wineries, then we wouldn't come to the conclusion that they are not defined as farm use by the statute, that they are a use that is otherwise permitted outright or based on certain criteria, or they are a non-farm conditional use.
Well, as you can say, so then I guess, you know, this case, the Craven case, was decided in 1989, obviously interpreting statute that was in force prior to that. So you're saying the 1989 amendments trumped the Craven case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, the 1989 amendments were, by the legislature, were to be consistent with the Craven case, basically to codify the Craven case in statute. That's my understanding, and that's the quote from the Attorney General's brief.
Okay, Williams?
The brief that you're referencing, could you explain? Is this a Department of Revenue brief in another ongoing case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, this is a brief by the Department of Revenue that was submitted by the Attorney General. It's in the King Estates winery case that's before the Supreme Court.
And how did that brief fare at the Court of Appeals? How did the department fare when that issue was decided by the Court of Appeals? Or did it go through the tax court?
Why don't you answer the question, because I'm... Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, perhaps if you're interested in pursuing this, Jim and Eric can come up and testify. It's my understanding that the King Estates Winery case, the tax court, looking at 215-203, which is a definition of farm use, not seeing wineries included in that definition, ruled that wineries are not a farm use. And that decision then was appealed to the Supreme Court.
We have battling court cases.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm confused about is if, in fact, what the 89 legislature intended to do was to codify the Craven case, then my reading of the Craven case says that, in fact, a winery can be farm use. And if that's what we intended to codify, and then I've heard that the tax court apparently viewed it differently in the King's Estate case, then it seems to me like we're at a point of some confusion here. And I'd frankly like to read these, I guess, a little bit more to understand it.
Well, I think basically that's the way I view this bill, is that it's coming down to a policy decision on our part as to whether we want to say wineries, and then with the dash ones, in association with wine, the growing of wine grapes, are acceptable uses for EFU land, and therefore qualify for the personal property exemption.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask our colleagues from the counties another question?
Sure.
Why is a wine press, a portable wine press, in essentially not like a regular piece of farm equipment? Gary gave the example when he testified about a wine press being in some ways kind of like a combine. I recognize that the function they serve is different, but why is a guy who's growing wine grapes and has a portable wine press that he uses on his winery not entitled to the same kind of protection? Other than the fact that by doing so, we create an additional category of people who receive some tax relief underneath statutes if we include it, tell me why it isn't the same.
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, I caught that same comment by Mr. Conklin, and my ears perked up a little bit. Essentially, the combine simply cuts the wheat. It doesn't convert grains of wheat into anything. It just cuts it. And then it's shipped off other places to be converted into breads or bagels or whatever, process. The combine simply cuts it. Looking at the vineyard and the winery, there are, I'm sure, the vineyards have personal property where they use to cultivate and cut and bring the grapes in from the field, and those would already be eligible for a farm-use personal property exemption. The distinction is when you make the wine, that's not a farming activity, that's a processing activity, and therefore the personal property is not exempt. The combine doesn't process the wheat. It simply cuts it so that it can be processed somewhere else. That, I think, is the distinction that we're trying to make and that the statute currently makes.
But you get into other commodities. I know that everybody always talks about the egg bill of 93, and that eggs can be handled, sorted, sized, washed, packaged, and that's all considered processing, and yet then that can go right to the grocery store and be sold, so they're not converted into anything else. There's no other processing step in between there and the end consumer, and I guess the same would be true in the case of bottling wine.
Mr. Chair, there is that line, and different farm products have the line is different depending on the product. I mean, whether you're talking about apples or strawberries or eggs or wine, at what point do you get to, and there's several court cases dealing with this exact issue, where is that line between farming and processing? Different farm products have that line different places. The egg bill was sort of a whole different issue. That was the difference between personal and real property, not the difference between farming and processing, but essentially it's where that line is drawn in terms of at what point does it stop being a farm product and at what point does it become a processed product. I mean, if you want to take the line clear off, you could exempt the bakeries who take the grain. You go from the combine cuts it, you go to the miller who makes it into flour, and then you can take it all the way to the bakery in downtown Portland that makes it into bread. And that's an extension, so I mean, it just depends on how far you want to draw, push that line out.
We're talking about though processing that's only located in EFU zone with the dash one, so we're not talking about extending it to downtown Portland.
Not yet.
Mr. Chair, also, wine grapes are not simply packaged in a box. They're crushed and then it processed. So it's different from the egg packaging.
Yeah, eggs are not crushed either, I don't think. Okay, any other questions, Mr. Rosenbaum?
Thank you. Gentlemen, I apologize I didn't hear the beginning of your testimony, but I'm looking at the governor's letter and specifically talking about the effect of proposals like this on local governments. I'm wondering if this were amended to include a local option, if your opposition would be lessened at all. And my other question, which may be more directed at staff, is I have lost track of what happened to that bill that we passed a while ago that caused the state to reimburse 60% of the cost of
inflation. It's Ways and Means the other thing.
So I guess I'd ask you to comment on that provision
sure.
in relation to this.
Well, through the great help of the chairman of the committee, 2039 received a real positive hearing in the general government subcommittee. It hasn't gone to the full committee yet, but we only had one no vote in the subcommittee with amendments, delayed the effective date and so on. So we're very pleased about that, and we'll be working hard to get that on the floor, both houses. A local option would, that's the first, in the context of this bill, that's the first I've heard that suggestion, and certainly it would be preferable to what you have before you now.
Okay. Mr. Williams, did you have something else?
Not for these witnesses, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Should we hear from Jim or Gary, your guest? Let's hear from Jim and Eric first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Maneri with the Department of Revenue. I guess from my viewpoint, part of the confusion around this over time has simply been the way the statutes are laid out, and that's because you're dealing with use, farm use issues in the zone, which can occur in one committee or in with certain ideas, and then you try to tie the taxation policy into it. And so you have, for instance, you have one statute that defines farm use, another statute that allows uses within zones, and then you, in this case, you have an entirely separate statute that deals with an exemption on machinery and equipment. And so for the farm use generally, you're dealing with, it ties into the getting a special assessment on the land underneath, if it's for a farm activity, for farm use, and now you have this separate equipment exemption, and the courts, in the cases you've heard about, have been trying to tie together the intent of the legislature when it's acted in dealing with the other statutes on whether it intended also to give the exemption for machinery and equipment. And so the Craven case and then two subsequent tax court cases have tried to tie that together, and now it's back on appeal to the Supreme Court as to how those things tie together. And obviously, from the testimony, we are dealing with as you've discussed, sort of where you want the line to be, which gets into the question of what is processing and when does it begin, as well as a little easier question, which is whether it's real or personal property. The egg bill, obviously, was when that was debated, debated as a necessity of getting the product shipped, because as I recall, it said if you don't put it in cartons, what you have is omelets, not eggs. And so you had a debate around that, which is, again, with difficulty, where do you want the line? And this just brings it back again as to where you want the line in agricultural products for the tax treatment. And that spills over into, of course, where you draw the line will spill over into other agricultural processing and where the line should be.
And currently, in the testimony we just heard as far as this other case that's pending now, is the department's position is that processing equipment is taxable. That's correct?
Yes. As was stated, the Supreme Court in the Craven case in 89, that was before you changed the statute, looked at, again, these combinations and said, we think that wineries are a farm use, something like that. Then you changed the statute. The legislature changed the statute in 89 to, in effect, say that wineries were allowed in a farm use zone. And the tax court came along in 94 in the Girardet case, interpreting the Supreme Court again, and said, well, we think it's a farm use then. And in 97, the tax court came along in this King Estate Winery and reversed itself from the earlier decision, saying I think the court misinterpreted the Supreme Court because of the intent. If the Supreme Court had the 89 change before it, it would have decided differently. That's what the tax court said. But again, it's trying to tie together these different pieces to see what tax intent. So the department, the Attorney General is arguing for the department to support the tax court decision. in the Canyon State Winery case. Because it appears that the legislature has said that a winery is a non-farm use allowed in a farm use zone. And that's the fundamental argument.
Okay. Okay, Shirley.
Jim, could you touch briefly on the interplay between this bill and the statute that we looked at in the bill a couple of weeks ago regarding that 10,000 square foot processing facility? How do these two play together?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly. The 10,000 square foot piece of the law, actually, it's referenced in two places. One is actually in the statute that defines farm use, and also it's spilled over into the land use statute also. So the courts have said that when you put something in the farm use definition statute, then then it is a farm use, and as a farm use is qualified for both the special assessment of the land underneath and the machinery equipment exemption. So it really, that's again the way the statutes are laid out, and we intend to do an interim project on this, so it's a little cleaner. It just depends on where you put that. If it's a 10,000 square foot piece had not been put in the statute that defines farm use, then it would not be entitled to the benefit. But that is where it was put in 97. So the Attorney General has told us, and we think the court cases so far are pretty clear on that, that it would then get the machinery equipment exemption.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Wineries would get the machinery or not? Because I thought you said the wineries aren't farm use, and the statute they're interpreted as being non-farm but permitted in farm use.
The Representative Shetterly, a winery that is could qualify under the 10,000 square foot processing piece that you saw earlier, along with other agricultural processing too,
would get the property tax exemption, personal and
the land and the personal movable equipment. Yes. So that's a separate piece. Here, what you do, you bill before you simply goes right into the exemption statute for machinery and equipment, and then adds that equipment for processing of wine, personal property, gets the exemption. So that goes in directly and does it into the exemption statute. The 10,000 square foot is over in the farm use definition, which the court said will automatically give it to the exemption to you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, to clarify then, currently we have wineries, small wineries of less than 10,000 square feet, processing facility. They are receiving or eligible to receive the personal property tax exemption. Do I understand that to be
correct? Representative Shetterly, that according to the Attorney General, they are entitled to it. I do not know the actual. I haven't surveyed the counties to see what the actual treatment is. So,
Mr. Chair, I guess what comes to mind, I'd like to know a little bit about that, I guess, and what impact that has on the revenue impact statement. If you've got, and I would assume a lot of these wineries are under 10,000 square feet in terms of processing space. If you've got wineries that either are already receiving the property tax, personal property tax exemption, or are eligible to receive it, if they applied for it, then does that make the revenue impact of this bill smaller?
Representative Shetterly, just so that you understand, with that, when we were hearing that bill for 2526, and we were trying to increase that square footage, you know, from 10,000 to 40,000, I was asking counties at that time, how many of you give any personal property tax exemption for these small wineries? And I didn't find one county that gave any personal property tax exemption for small wineries. Okay, they would give the land under a special assessment, but they would not give personal property tax, exemption. So how many of these wineries are under 10,000 square feet, I don't know. But when I asked them how many were under 40,000, they said, oh, that would be most all of them.
Interesting question. Say what?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, are there any other analogies that you can think of similar to wines grown with the express purpose of being made, grapes grown with the express purpose of being made into wine, other products, other agricultural products that might be processed on the farmland, and if so, how do we treat the personal property in those examples?
Representative Witt, members of the committee.
Right.
I'm trying to think of the connections. Obviously, breweries aren't located on it, so you wouldn't have the hops to the beer. I can't think of. Without a.
How about fruit juices? Is there any processing that takes place of fruit juices on, with products that were grown specifically for to make it into a juice?
Well, I'm not aware of that. I mean, I assume it would be a very small operation.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, should I?
Just following up on that, how about mint or dill? Those are extracted usually right on the farm.
I don't think there's an exemption for that at this point.
But if I heard everybody correctly, if it's a mint distillery that's under 10,000 square feet, wouldn't that be?
That might qualify for that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Jim?
Mr. Chairman, just maybe chime in with Representative Witt here for a moment. What about dairy cattle, Jim? That's treated more closely like this than not, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, in terms of the processing of the milk, I don't know if that's been a, I don't, again, most of that equipment in the dairy is fixed, so it's real property. That's one of the things about this exemption, it only applies to personal property, so it's only mobile type things. But certainly you could say the processing of milk to the extent that you have to. I'm not familiar with dairies, so the extent that you have to pass it right or whatever they do to make it sellable would be a question.
I think the Farm Bureau might have an answer here.
Probably a better one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau. Milk is not processed on the farm. It's put into a big milk tank where it's cooled, and then the truck comes and picks it up and takes it to the processing plant. Mr. Maneri is correct in that the equipment is mostly fixed. We were after that for a number of years trying to get that exempt. We have not been able to do so to this point. In my own operation, we have a prune dehydrator. The movable items were exempt, the fixed items, or more recently, with the change in the department's administrative rule, if it's not movable, it used to be if it was bolted down, then it was real estate and not personal property, but then that's since been changed to say if it's not readily movable. We had a number of pieces that weren't bolted down, but they weren't readily movable, and so all of a sudden they became part of the real estate and taxed as real estate rather than being exempt under property tax. The mint distilleries are, I believe, are a piece of equipment. They're a portable thing. It's not a fixed location kind of thing. Another type of industry would be your grass seed warehouses and cleaners. They're right on the farm. Again, it's the things that are bolted down and not readily movable are taxed as real estate. And the other things are basically exempt. Now, where you come into a fine point is whether it's industrial or whether it's farm. And I'm not sure that I can articulate that distinction for you, but that can cause some of the problem as well. And I don't know if Jim has comments on that or whether Mr. Linares has comments relative to that.
Mr. Chair? Well, I'd be interested to know if the county representatives agree that personal property in a winery of or less than 10,000 square feet would be subject to exemption even under current law. Whether they
That's what they testified to already.
Is that right? Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chairman, Secretary for the Record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Our understanding of your intention of House Bill 2625, which you passed out, was that it did not affect the personal property. The bill was sent to the issue you were talking about was 20,000 versus 40,000, 10,000 versus 40,000 square feet, and you intended to deal only with the land under the structure. However, since you took your action and all indicated that your intention was only to deal with the land, we've learned that there's tax court cases that lock this in, apparently, to include the personal property in the exemption. That the real problem was this concept was adopted last session without any revenue committee review. It was done in land use committees. There was no discussion of the revenue aspect, and because of the tangled way the laws are written, the effect on the farm use statutes have an effect on the revenue statutes.
The answer is that wineries having a processing facility of 10,000 square feet or less are eligible for the personal property tax exemption, whether we intended that or not, you're saying under the tax court cases that you've
Chair Representative Shirley, according to the Department of Revenue, they are.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Don Schellenberg, Oregon Farm Bureau, I'd like to respond to that and agree with that. And you've been working around this issue all morning, but 215-203 is the statute that defines what is farm use. And those processing plants less than 10,000 square feet are defined as a farm use, and I think it's very clear that those would receive any other relief, tax relief that's available to any other item listed in 215-203. It does not make any distinction.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kapoor.
Can we hear from Mr. Conklin again and his...
He's got somebody else with him, so he'll be in next.
And if I let me just conclude while I'm here, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I wasn't signed up. I intended to, but I didn't see the thing when I got in here. Maybe nobody signed up. I don't know. But nevertheless, would Farm Bureau would like to also offer our support for the bill and the amendment. And the amendment in particular, I would like to make one suggestion for a conceptual change to that amendment, and that would be on line 3 of the amendment after the word growing. You include the words, a significant portion of the, and then at the end add the words being processed. So they'll read, if the winery is located in an EFU zone, paraphrase, and the winery owner is growing a significant portion of the wine grapes being processed, our concern there would be they could grow 15 feet of grapes, and that would be all they did. They would be totally a commercial operation located in the EFU zone and then would qualify, and I don't believe that's the intent here. And so as we do with other things, our concern is that what we are in favor of is what's called vertical integration on the farm, and that is you do more of the things on the farm with that product, as many as you can, value added, if you please, for farmers. You do as much of that as you can, and we would support that, and we believe these changes would do that. What we don't want to do is cross that line from in conjunction with farm use into commercial. And so that would be the reason for the nature of our suggestion. But with those amendments, we would support Senate Bill 595. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I, Jim Lanieri for the record, if I could add two things. One is, if you're inclined to follow Mr. Schellenberg's suggestion on the amendment, I would ask you not to say significant portion, please.
Define that.
Put in a percentage, whatever, you know, that's a lot clearer to administer. The second is that in terms of the administration under the 10,000 square foot processing law that you put in 97, we didn't get clarity from the Attorney General's office on this till right around the time that you were actually hearing that bill or afterwards. And I think that, I'm not sure, but I think a number of the counties were under the impression that that 1997 change that you made entitled them to the land underneath as farm use, because that statute talks about land use of the land, but didn't, if they weren't administering it, they weren't realizing it tied into the machinery equipment exemption statute also.
Okay. Anything else for Jim? Thank you. Harry, you and or your guest.
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Gary Conkling with OWA. I have one of our members in, as well as our legal counsel, and I thought given some of the discussion this morning, particularly about legal points, that our legal counsel may be a valuable person, so I'll let Mr. Lyon identify himself and then make a few comments.
Okay. I apologize. I do have another meeting that I have to go through here shortly, but it's not leaving because you're coming up here.
All right. For the record, my name is Jesse Lyon, and I work for Davis Wright Tremaine. We are the general counsel to the Wine Growers Association, and I think the discussion you've heard already really indicates the need that we have for you to clarify this for us as a matter of tax policy. To run through some of the issues that we've discussed, that Craven case was decided by the Supreme Court, and it said that wineries are an accepted farming practice. Great. The King Estate case was decided by the tax court. And the tax court might think that it can overrule the Supreme Court, but so far it doesn't have that authority. And I know you've been offered the brief on the King Estate appeal. We have a brief we'd be more than happy to share with you as well. But I would caution you that reading those briefs in some ways could confuse the issue that's before you today as far as clarifying that this tax policy. Those briefs address a narrow set of facts, and they're about trying to unwind a web of previous decisions. They're not about your affirmative statement in this legislature. And the King Estate tax court decision, in fact, was based, we believe, on an incorrect interpretation of legislative history. As some of the previous witnesses have indicated, there is an important distinction between land use policy and tax policy, and sometimes the definitions do get confused. But when wineries were added to the list of uses in farm zones, they may have fallen under a different line of items that the local governments would believe that indicate that they should not be considered farming practices. But if you can look at the legislative history at that time, it indicates that it was wineries were listed as a permitted use in order to expedite the process for citing wineries, because we had run into this roadblock zones with local governments on the flip side, on land use perspective, and now we're running into it again on the tax use perspective. So with all due respect, I think obviously there's some difference of opinion on the legislative history as well. In ORS 215-213, the provision that House Bill 2625 would amend, it's interesting that the definition of those farm processing facilities currently is 10,000 square feet. That falls under the same list of approved uses in farm zones that a winery does. So it's interesting to hear some of the local government representatives indicate that those facilities are subject to personal property exemptions, but wineries are not. As a matter of fact, wineries and those processing facilities in practice have not been getting that tax treatment. And again, that's why we need you to clarify that for us today.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I want to make sure. I think on the record they said that they are entitled to the personal property tax exemption. That's what I've heard. Whether they've been receiving it or not, or whether that's been clear, we've got the Department of Revenue and the counties on record this morning indicating that the 10,000 square foot processing facility exemption does apply to wineries.
And we would hope that would continue to be their position, but we would ask you today to clarify that wineries in particular qualify for that exemption, because it's not clear whether their whether the position in the long run would have to do with the size of the facility or the nature of the operation, whether it's a farm processing facility of one product or if it happens to be a farm processing facility of grapes, which is also known as a winery.
Let me ask if I can. Let's assume that the Department of Revenue and counties are stuck with the position that the processing facilities of 10,000 square feet or less are subject or are eligible for this property tax exemption. That seems like a 90% win as far as the Winery Association is concerned. I'm not sure how many more you have that are more than 10,000 square feet, but I expect most of them aren't. I guess if we pass this bill, and including the amendments, though, that limit the exemption to wineries located in EFU zone where the winery owner is growing grapes, we attach these conditions now to receiving the property tax exemption, are we actually making it more difficult for wineries to qualify for the exemption by this specific statute with its specific qualification criteria than if we leave it alone and let more of them just fall under the 10,000 square foot exemption?
Well, under the interpretations that we've heard today by the local government, it sounds like there's two definitions that wineries might fall under. We're also dealing with the situation where, again, our bill, which it's easy to get distracted from, it focuses on tax treatment, and we may end up with another court case in a couple of years that says, let's clearly distinguish the land use definitions from the tax treatment issues. And in this bill, by specifically saying wineries in farm use zones, you're clarifying what that tax treatment should be rather than having to weave the web of definitions. If I might, I'd also like to make one other point on the processing definition, this line that we try to draw, and again, admittedly, it's particularly fuzzy, but the statute already includes provisions for machinery and equipment used in the storage of farm crops. And like a combine, and I've driven one, it is more than just cutting. The combine cuts the grain, shakes the grain, cleans the grain, sorts the grain, and then you have a storable product at that point. Wine grapes can't be stored indefinitely as wine grapes. They can only be stored in their crushed form. So we would be asking for the opportunity to have our wine grapes, the equipment used to get our wine grapes into storable and saleable form, exempt from these personal property taxes.
Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Vice Chair, committee members, my name is Carl Daumhauer. I'm representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. I'm also representing myself as a wine grower. I've been involved in agriculture on the onset of my life, and at the present time we have 100 acres of wine grapes in production. We produce somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 tons per year. We deliver this fruit to 5 of the larger wineries in the state of Oregon. Besides, we started our own winery. The reason that we started our own winery, and this comes to the part of which comes first, the combine or the press, I think. And in 1995, we lost 100 ton of Pinot Noir grapes because they were unable to process them at the wineries that they were supposed to go to. And let me tell you, if you don't have a press to press wine grapes, it's just like a combine, because there is no way to get the chaff out of the wheat. And so you have absolutely nothing but a bunch of pulp with little berries on vines if you don't put them in a press. So all of this is relevant to the fact that there is no product until you take and press them. And a press is, equipment is what the seems to be the biggest argument about the personal property thing. We are a family farm. I have 3 children that operate with me. My one son does row crops. I have a daughter that has a seedling nursery. produces something like 1.5 million trees a year to furnish to the nursery industry. We would like to stay in farming, and we like to continue it. We have lived in Yamhill County a number of years, more than 50. At one time, about 26 years ago, they dispensed with the personal property tax in Yamhill County, and now it looks like they want to come back with it again. And Yamhill County, of course, has the most wineries in the state of Oregon. So my proposal and request to you folks today that you accept and approve the amendment as done. I also, and they talk about revenue, I also have been on a local school board since 1969, and I am still there. Revenue, I understand revenue. I understand what isn't and what is. And through that, I would not encourage you to have this as a consideration in losing $168,000 per year in the counties. There, like I said before, without the crushing of the grapes, there is no product. And basically, the people on the other end of the tax spectrum do not tax things until they're put into a bottle. So that equipment, up until that time, there is absolutely no tax. So that would be another reason why I'd encourage you not to do this. The 10,000 square foot limit, I don't know that any of the wineries that in 10 or 15 years, which this law would encompass, I don't believe any of the wineries, I would say today, would be under the $10,000 square foot limit. And so I would not encourage this to be something for us to sit on. I thank you very much for allowing me. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy.
I appreciate your patience. We've been fairly carefully examining the issue and have taken a little while to come to your testimony and appreciate your patience with us. Are there any questions? Okay, is there any other testimony you want to bring forward? Is there anyone else desiring to speak on this issue at this point in time? Can you keep it very brief? Very brief. Yes, I know it's a work session. We're working it hard. Come forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires representing the Special Districts Association, and just like to express our opposition to Senate Bill 595. Particularly the impact in Yamhill County, there are approximately 13 special districts in that county. Five of those are, I believe, not levying any property taxes. The remainder, seven rural fire protection districts, which would protect a lot of the property that's located in exclusive home use zones, would be impacted by this legislation, and one parks and recreation district. But of the seven rural fire protection districts that this would impact in Yamhill County, many of those are operating on very small budgets, and two of them are contract agencies to city fire departments and protect the land that is outside of the urban growth boundary of the city and would qualify for a lot of the property tax exemption that this bill would create.
I'm going to talk a little bit about where we're at with this bill. We're not going to move it today, but post it again for Thursday. The chair asked for a session from the committee. Are you comfortable with this bill? They want to move forward. We do have the dash ones in front of us. Is that something y'all are comfortable with? And one other question for you, as long as I'm throwing them all out on the table. We have a suggested conceptual amendment where a certain percentage of the wine grapes being processed, we have some control over how much is going to be local grapes versus that which is brought in. And if we're going to go to Thursday, I would suspect that if we could set a percentage today, we could have amendments drafted rather than doing conceptual amendments. Do you have a sense of where you want to be with that, Representative Ray?
Madam Chair, I am comfortable with the bill. I do like the dash ones. I think the idea of having a minimum percentage of the grapes that are being made into wine, being grown by the ownery, the owner of the winery, probably makes sense, but I think we might, frankly, need some testimony on that, because it's common in making wine that you get grapes from different areas and different vineyards. I don't know, if someone can give us some testimony on that, it might be helpful. I'd hate to pick that percentage out in a vacuum without any kind of testimony in terms of what are industry practices.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Gary Conkling. I'm representing the wine growers. This idea has been suggested before, and as Representative Witt indicated, it is more complicated than you think.
It always is.
Well, exactly. The reason why wineries exist on vineyard land is obviously to use the grapes that they're growing. But percentages can really differ given the types of wine they might produce. And again, this is a crop, and there are times when there are failures. In fact, our witness talked about one of those situations that came about through the result of the absence of processing equipment. But we have regions of this state where freezing occurs and other damage can occur. We also have different kinds of infestations that impact crops as well. So what part of the dilemma that you have is that we'd certainly be glad to chat with you about it, and if you were going to do something, I think the notion Representative Witt is coming up with is some minimum. But if you hinge it to a number, it's really quite variable from potentially one region to the other, and even from one type of wine to the other.
One year to another, I would think. I was going to say, some of this looks like a very complicated amendment, ranging from, you know, let's see if there's ability to specify grapes, or, you know, you can have a 1 or 2 year bad years and not lose the exemption.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at the Dash 1 amendments now, it has the language, and the winery owner is growing wine grapes. It doesn't stipulate a particular percentage, but it does require that the winery owner be in the business of growing wine grapes. Now, as I look at that, I'm frankly comfortable with that. If we're going to accept the broader policy here, which I am comfortable with, I think the movable property used to convert wine grapes into wine is an integral part of producing wine. The grapes grown specifically to produce wine, that's why you're growing these grapes. I think with the Dash 1 amendments, it makes it clear that the winery owner also has to be in the business of growing wine grapes. Given the tremendous variability that you might have from year to year, from type of wine to type of wine, vineyard to vineyard, I would rather leave it that way than putting in some kind of an arbitrary percentage.
Any further discussion from the committee on that?
Not on that point, but I did have a question.
Well, on that point, is any further discussion on that? You're comfortable moving, if we move the Dash 1 amendments, you're comfortable without trying to put any sort of fence around what percentage of wine is actually used?
Madam Chairman, I don't have a real problem with it. I recognize, I think, the concern the county has that someone could essentially have a processing facility. And the comment was made, grow 15 feet of grapes. I would agree with Representative Witt that that's not the intent of the statute, and that it certainly seems to me to be indicating someone who is in the business actually growing wine grapes for production purposes. I don't know whether or not we need to, I imagine the counties, if we do this, would like us to be as explicit as possible with that kind of a requirement. And without setting a percentage, maybe something that requires that the person be in the business of growing wine grapes for production purposes might not be a bad insertion.
Any further discussion on the bill?
I have a question.
Representative Rosenberg.
But actually, before that, Madam Chair, I do have a comment, which, in light of the previous discussion and testimony, it seems like the last thing we need is doing any more litigation about what the intent was. And so following up on Representative Williams' comment, it seems like there is a case to be made for being fairly explicit. If that's really what we're talking about, we need to spell that out in the amendment. My question, though, is arguments have come to me about this sort of camel's nose under the tent or camel's nose under the yurt. And I'm wondering, though, I know it's not your problem, but it is ours or may become ours, if you have any way that we distinguish this specific request you're making from others that might come forward in the future.
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, we've tried to be narrow in our construction of our language and tried to make a case that relates to wine grapes and wineries. I think, in fact, there are analogous situations, which you've actually had a discussion about today, that may apparently already be things that are eligible for an exemption, whether or not they're getting them or not, is part of the issue. That is really the issue we have had, is that it has not been clear. We believe we have and should qualify for the exemption, but haven't received it. That's the reason for pushing the bill. Whether there are others who would feel strongly enough about it or who would bother, I don't know. And again, what we have attempted to do is to not create a precedent by writing our language as narrowly as we know how to do it. And I should have added, Mr. Lyon reminded me that in response to the first question, there's a two-part test for a winery qualifying for this exemption. They have to be in an EFU zone, and the winery owner has to grow grapes. To qualify to be in an EFU zone, they're going to have to be more than an incidental vineyard operator. And that's the reason, again, we attempted to listen to local government and respond to some of their concerns. We appreciate we're not perhaps solving all of them, but at least we tried to listen and do the best we could with our general premise of a narrow construction of this language.
Now you approach the microphone. I'm trying to bring some closure into our process today. Are you wanting to speak?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to offer a suggestion. Rather than using a percentage, there are other places in the statutes where essentially to do one thing, you have to have land that's under farm use in common ownership. So if they're growing grapes, if they've got 15 feet of grapes, the assessor's probably not going to give them any farm use. They have to have at least probably half an acre, if not an acre, to qualify for farm use. So if they've got a winery and they've got land where they're growing grapes and that land is eligible for farm use, maybe that's a suggestion rather than just having a winery out there with 15 feet of grapes.
Okay. Well, as I say, I think we're going to be posting this again for the work on Thursday, and we should be prepared for that. A couple of other messages from the chair. He's asking us all to be here tomorrow morning at 8:30, not 8:15, but 8:30, because there is a little fix on the timber bill that we need to pull back and clean up. And he's indicating that should be a brief meeting, and that should be our business for today. And we are adjourned. Thank you.